In his new book, Pacific, historian and writer Simon Winchester writes about the Pacific Ocean as the future.
The Mediterranean was the inland sea of the classical world, and the Atlantic, the inland sea of today's world. And what I try to posit in this book is that the Pacific is the inland sea of tomorrow's world. So each of the essays, based on a chronological series of events that happened between 1950 and 2015, indicate the ocean of the future, an ocean that has been disdained and disrespected and despoiled by Western people who have been coming there since Magellan in the 16th century, but which slowly, because we imperialists, if I put it in a non-sort of critical manner, have withdrawn from and are leaving the Pacific peoples now to stand on their own two feet at long last. So now they are standing on their own two feet, then the troubles that we Westerners have caused the Pacific are beginning to ebb away, and a sort of rather brighter future is emerging.
You knew a lot about it already. You wrote the book Krakatoa, but what surprised you most when you started researching this?
How bewildering an assemblage of peoples and cultures and religions and races, and how it is, I suppose, in essence, what I discovered, which I suppose should have been hidden in plain sight, was the fact that the Pacific is really the meeting place at long last of East and West. It sounds rather trite to say that, but if you remember that humankind began in what is now Ethiopia and then went north and split into two, the Eastern group going Mesopotamia, the Indus Valley, Peking, the Western group going the Balkans, Europe, and then the Eastern group stayed where they were. The Western group crossed the Atlantic, went to the Americas, crossed the Americas. There was the Pacific Ocean, this gigantic barrier, 10,500 miles, and then eventually they crossed it, and at last these two great civilizations met. And the question is, I suppose, once again, it goes to the centrality of the book, is whether these two peoples, Easterners and Westerners, are colliding in a hostile manner or meeting in a cooperative manner, and what occurs between them is really going to define the future of the planet.
One example of East meeting West is in the South Pacific Islands, and we've got this image of these exotic islands with sandy beaches, but you take us to the Marshall Islands, which you compare to Calcutta. You say it looks more like a slum than a country which enjoys a free association with the United States. So how did the Marshall Islands get that way?
Well, they are just as you say. They could be on the cover of a National Geographic magazine. Beautiful coral beaches, peaceful lagoons, lots of wonderful exotic fish. But since the end of World War II, the Marshall Islands, not all of them, but the ones in the eastern part of the Marshall Islands, have been used for all manner of American military activity. There's a huge base, a place called Kwajalein, which is still the Ronald Reagan Pacific Missile Testing Center. And there is Bikini and Eniwetok, less well known, that atolls which have been used for a devastating series of nuclear weapons testing. So I think what I saw, I think we all know about Bikini and the terrible legacy of the thermonuclear testing. But what happened on Kwajalein, we know less well. This is an atoll, maybe 50 miles long with 70-odd islands in it, which are now used for missile testing. And the American government pays a considerable sum each year to the Marshall Islands government to rent these islands, as it were. But unfortunately, the Marshall Islanders themselves aren't allowed to live on the same islands that the Americans live on. And they're corralled onto a tiny island called Ibai, which looks much, it's about the size of a New York City block. And 15,000 people are crammed into this. It's like a pullulating slum. I mean, I used to live in India, so I know Calcutta very well. And it looks much like it. There are very poor schools. There's little fresh water. And yet this is their island, and yet they're not allowed to live except in this one confined spot, and the barbed wire protects the Americans who live in sort of country club existence on the rest of the Kwajalein Atoll. I think it's utterly shameful. It's not entirely the Americans' fault, because within the Marshall Islands hierarchy, there are chiefs who disperse the money that the Americans pay. And many of them, it has to be said, live in large mansions in Honolulu, 3,000 miles away. So there's an evident amount of corruption as well. But it's a tragic scene. And it's one of the things that America knows very little about, a country that enjoys, in quotes, free association, as you said, with the United States.
It's kind of shocking. Is there any move to try to reform this?
Well, I'm hoping in my way that this book of mine will sort of raise a few red flags and people back in Washington may say this is outrageous. And it is outrageous. And that these people live in this a tropical slum merely to make a convenience for missile testing in places like the missiles are fired towards Kwajalein from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California and from Kodiak in Alaska. And simply to please the Pentagon, these people, whose islands it is, as I keep mentioning, are corralled in such squalid circumstances, is shocking, and it needs to be changed, and maybe my book will help.
Simon Winchester's book is called Pacific, and it talks about that ocean since 1950. Pacific means peaceful, but the ocean is anything but. Hurricane Patricia recently astounded meteorologists with its almost unprecedented power. There's this massive zone of warm water named by Washington State climatologist Nick Bond, the Blob, which has been associated with creating warm and dry weather in the western U.S. and disrupting the entire food web of marine life. Has the Pacific always been a misnomer for this ocean?
Oh, very much so. Magellan, when he sailed in after a pretty arduous time in the Strait of Magellan, out into the sea to the west of what is we now know as Chile, it happened to be a beautiful day. And we all know that the Pacific does enjoy tranquil weather in abundance, but not all the time. And there are ferocious storms. And indeed, the admiral that was in charge of all Pacific forces until very recently had said that the greatest threat to America's security in the Pacific is not the nuisance of North Korea, is not, in fact, the potential threat of China, but is the ceaseless and ever-increasing devastation caused by almighty storms, which are getting stronger, more ferocious and more numerous than ever before. It really began a trend in 1974 with a massive cyclone that destroyed the city of Darwin in Australia. And it's bookended by a huge, the biggest storm of all in recent times, Haiyan, which killed 6,000 people in the Philippines a couple of years ago. And the number of these super, super deep, super intense storms is increasing and everyone's getting very worried about it. The Pacific, I should say, in addition, is, although it has its own cohort of very bad storms, it also essentially generates the weather for the rest of the planet. So as goes the Pacific, so goes the world. And if there's much ferocity in the atmosphere in the Pacific, we're going to get it too.
Simon Winchester, author of the book Pacific, Silicon Chips and Surfboards, Coral Reefs and Atom Bombs, Brutal Dictators and Fading Empires, and the Coming Collision of the World's Superpowers. Yes, it's all in there. Coming up in the coming days on The Record, Carrie Brownstein, a principal in the group Slater Kinney, and also with Fred Armisen, the creator of Portlandia, a conversation with her about her new memoir, Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl.